Hello there, P-Dub. It's me, Wichita Rutherford. I'm here in my home, in the library, smoking one of them big cigars you give me and having a glass of sherry. Oh, it's nice. I'm sitting in that big leather chair. You know, the one you always sit in. Oh, comfy cozy. Bless your heart, you precious little thing. I'm so proud of you and happy for you. You told me he's going to do this and he's going to work, and he was right. And it was Abraham Lincoln, or was it Steve Perry from Journey, that said, "The future is at best uncertain for us all." I don't think it's uncertain for you, my friend. I think the podcasting horizon sees a big old sunshiny ball and hits you and your podcast. Digital flotsam! Because it relaxes me. I turn that on and it just says, "Relax your crack." And I do. Well, it's time for your new episode to come out, so I'm going to toddle over here to the iBook G4 and fire up some digital flotsam. You be good. I'm so proud of you and so happy for you. Congratulations, my friend. And to many more years, this is to you.
I'm having a drink now.
And here comes your show. I like the beginning. It goes, meow, 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 meow.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Digital Flotsam. I'm P.W. Fenton. I'll bet everybody has a few things that they've just never confessed to. You know, like the time you dented your dad's car, but since he assumed somebody must have dinged him in the supermarket parking lot, you never felt the need to change his mind. I've actually had a few of those that my dad learned about for the first time by listening to Digital Flotsam. Well, this edition of Digital Flotsam deals with a doozy. And once you hear the whole story, you'll understand why I kept it quiet for so long. This was no innocent kid screw-up. This was a biggie. For instance, I've never told anybody before, but I really don't mind my foods touching each other. I protested about my foods touching each other once as a joke, and I got such flack about it from my family, I decided to stick with it. So now I guess I just ruined it. Another example of a true confession. Very few people know that I have never watched a movie with Meryl Streep in it since I saw Kramer vs. Kramer. I refused to watch a good 30 or so films, award winners, all because she took Dustin Hoffman's baby for no reason at all. The bitch. But those confessions are only mildly embarrassing. Hardly worthy of the word confession. The tale I'm about to tell is a whole nother story. For 6 years during the 1970s, I had the perfect job for someone with, shall we say, outside interests. I worked on the midnight shift at a minimum security prison. It was hard to even think of it as a prison. Sure, it had a double fence and barbed wire at the top, but there were no cells, no lockdown, none of the things that you would think of when you think of a prison. I mean, the living areas had recreation rooms with pool tables. Can you even imagine a prison that supplied inmates with deadly weapons like pool sticks and pool balls? This was no ordinary prison, and these were no ordinary prisoners. They were all fairly young, and they were all detoxed heroin junkies. They had to convince the court that they were really good people that only resorted to crime to support their expensive habit. It was a bad idea in the history of New York State. Junkies are incredible liars, the best in the world, and every one of these guys had lied their way into this facility, thinking it would be a short and easy time. Much to their surprise, once they got there, they discovered that they had no fixed sentence, that they couldn't count down the days till they were released. They would only be released when a shrink decided they were actually rehabilitated. Could be a few months, could be years. It was up to them, and the shrinks knew all of the scams. A lot of inmates actually told me that they would much rather have been in a real jail counting the days. For the first few years, I worked in one of these living units. It was what everyone with the least seniority did. 8 hours with just you and 47 junkies. Nobody was armed on the inside or the outside. It was just a matter of matching wits with 47 different master schemers. It wasn't all that hard, and of course, for most of the midnight shift, they were all snoring. And soon I gained remarkable skills at sleeping at my own desk. The danger was that a supervisor might make his rounds unannounced and catch you napping. But soon I was able to sleep at my desk, sitting up straight with my head tilted forward, with a pen in my hand resting on my logbook. At the slightest sound of a door unlocking, I would instantly begin moving my hand as if I was writing in my book and become fully wide awake. It's the kind of thing that soldiers in combat learn to do. Wake up instantly from a dead sleep, ready to fight. At the end of a shift, I would feel so rested that it was almost like not having a job. It wasn't until I gained a little seniority and bid my way outside to perimeter duty, as it was called, did I realize how great a slacker I could really become. A perimeter guy manned a tower that was physically just inside the fence, except for two of the towers, Tower 1 and Tower 2, which were outside the fence. All of the towers had heat, an AC, a sink, a toilet, and electrical outlets. Guys who worked in them had portable TVs, radios, tape players, hot plates, coffee pots, little mini stoves, anything you could imagine. Some guys were happy to be up all night. Some guys slept professionally. About the only thing you actually had to do was what they called a fence check. Several times a night, we would receive a phone call or a call on our walkie-talkies telling us to do a fence check. We would all get out of our towers and walk along the fence looking for any sign of an escape attempt. Most of the time it was uneventful, but occasionally we would actually discover that while we were watching TV or cooking burgers or sleeping, someone had cut a hole in the fence and escaped, or had simply climbed over the fence, leaving a blanket that they used to protect themselves from the barbed wire. The alarm would be sounded via radio and telephone, and somebody inside would discover that while he was sleeping, one of his 47 residents had slipped out a window. In a word, security was lax. Occasionally, we would actually catch someone trying to escape. One of us who wasn't asleep would hear the fence rattle, alert the rest of us, and sure enough, we'd find somebody with their pants caught on the barbed wire or some such predicament, and we'd all look like we were actually doing our jobs. The occupants of the two towers outside the fence had even less to do. They didn't do fence checks at all. Their job was to control the electric gates in the fence. Tower 1 had the gate at the main entrance. Tower 2 had the gates for deliveries around the side of the facility. On a midnight shift, these towers had pretty much nothing to do all night. About the only thing you actually had to do was not get caught sleeping, and there wasn't much chance you would. If a supervisor was out roaming around, you would almost always be warned by a fellow slacker, I was such a professional slacker that from a dead sleep, I could answer my phone on the first ring and clearly say my tower number and my name, which was the proper greeting.
Tower 7, Fenton.
After that, I was a little foggy, but I could be totally convincing with that first phrase. Some might think that my big confession was simply that for several years of my life, I was a professional slacker. I told you, this is a biggie. So by the time I had enough seniority for Tower 2 to become my permanent assignment, I had become such a professional slacker that I was going to college full-time during the day. I was carrying 12 credits. I slept most of the night at work, and in the morning, I would drive home, grab a shower and a bit of breakfast, and then off to college. It was fantastic.
We'll be right back.
Okay, so here comes the good part. I had been working in the very desirable Tower 2 for quite some time now, and had gotten into a fabulous routine. As soon as I had taken over the tower from the evening shift guy, and had watched all of the evening shift workers get in their cars and leave, I would gather up the three chairs in the tower and bring them all to the upper level, where I would line them up so that I could stretch out on them as if I had a little bed. I could get a much more comfortable and restful sleep this way. It was late fall, and I cranked up the heat and made it nice and toasty in the tower. Tower 2 was a great sleeping tower, not only because of the extra chairs, but because you almost always got an early warning if a supervisor was making his rounds. There was almost no way for him to sneak up on you without somebody else seeing him first. On the rare occasion that I didn't get a warning, I had gotten pretty adept at making it look like, although the supervisor couldn't see me and therefore felt the need to shake the gate in order to get my attention, that I must have been able to see him. You see, just like I had trained myself to wake up instantly from the sound of a key in the lock when I worked inside, my brain was keenly tuned to the sound of that gate being shaken. When I heard it, I would reflexively swing my arm and hit the nearby big green button that would start the gate opening, and I would sit up sharply and be waving at the supervisor as he walked through the gate. This worked flawlessly. I don't believe the supervisor ever suspected I was sleeping. However, it was this particular skill that leads me to my big confession. Because on this rather cold night, nobody was aware that he somehow decided to visit Tower 2 first, something he rarely did. So there was no phone call from another officer warning me that he was on the prowl. So I was indeed sound asleep when I awoke to the sound of him shaking the chain link gate. But my training worked perfectly. Precisely at the moment I became aware of that sound, I rolled over, swung my fist at the big green button. The solenoid made the electrical connection, and the huge chain-link fence gate began to creep along its tracks as it opened. I was already offering a friendly wave as I rose up and came into view in the upper windows of the tower. What greeted my eyes made my mouth drop open in complete shock and surprise. As the two inmates jumped off the fence and walked through the open gate, they seemed just as shocked and surprised. But they waved back as they ran off into the darkness of the woods. I swung around and slammed the red button to close the gate, but by the time it closed, the grateful inmates had disappeared from sight. Two inmates that had been attempting to climb the fence strolled out when I waved at them and opened the gate. I just let two inmates escape. They were gone. I let them out and I waved at them. They waved back as if to say, "Hey, thanks, man. What do I do now? What could I possibly do to correct this incredible blunder? If I got on the radio and reported an escape in progress and the inmates were captured, they would certainly have to explain how they got out. Certainly they would tell the story about the officer who saw them climbing the fence and opened the gate and waved them through. Certainly I would have no explanation that I could think of that would make me look like I wasn't part of some escape plan. Even if they believed the truth that I was sleeping and opened the gate without even looking out the window, I would at the very least be fired. My heart pounded. I couldn't imagine a scenario that would make this turn out all right. But the longer I waited to do something, the more likely this escape would be successful. I had to do something. But wait, That's right. The longer this goes undiscovered, the more likely that these guys won't be found. I sat there and thought about that. I thought and I thought. But then I realized that sooner or later, the count of inmates would come up short, and then all hell would break loose. My conscience was needling me. I couldn't do nothing. So I picked up my radio, and I lied. Tower 2.
Go ahead, Tower 2.
I think I just saw somebody walking on the perimeter road just outside the fence on the south side of the facility.
Where is he now? What direction is he going?
He was almost out of sight when I first caught a glimpse of him. I don't see him anymore. Unbeknown to me, the two guys in the Jeep that was supposed to be patrolling the perimeter outside the fence were parked somewhere sleeping themselves. Only my use of the radio woke them up. The guys in the towers inside the fence got out on foot and walked the fences looking for a break. In 20 minutes, everyone reported all secure. The fence was fine. Of course it was. No one was found on the perimeter road, and most bizarre, all of the living unit counts were correct. All inmates were accounted for. I went home that morning, knowing that it couldn't possibly be true. I had no doubt in my mind that I had let two inmates escape.
Gets in trouble, you know, lots of things on his mind. When a man gets in trouble, oh, lots of things on his mind. Looking for some friends, sure hard to find. Feel like people, Lord, I've been stung right by a bee. Feel like people, I've been stung like by a bee. And times get so hard, always rolling over me.
Well, the next night, when I showed up for work at 11:30 p.m., my supervisor called me into his office. A chill went up my spine. Somehow, I was caught. My mind was spinning. What was I going to say? How could I possibly explain my screw-up, and worse, my deception? The supervisor spoke first. "I know you were right last night." "You know how I know?" I stiffened. "Sir?" "The day shift discovered two beds with makeshift dummies in them. Nobody looked closely enough to realize they were fake until around 9 a.m. I want you to know I'm writing you up." The hairs stood up on the back of my neck. I think I visibly shuddered. "You were the only person doing your job last night, and I want you to know that I appreciate it. Good job, Fenton. Your hair's too long, but you did a good job."
you're fine.
Inmates were never found. In fact, I found out months later that the escape was never even reported to the police. It wouldn't look good. There had been talk at the Capitol about closing our facility. No sense giving anyone fuel for that fire. And so, I kept the secret. I kept it the only way a secret can truly be kept. I never told anyone. Well, until now. So there you have it, another edition of Digital Flotsam. And I've given you my best true confession. At least the best one you're ever going to get. As usual, I've snuck some great music into my story, and if you've enjoyed it, wander on over to digitalflotsam.com or .org, whichever you prefer, and I'll have links to all the music you've heard. It will be your job to click on them and then buy all of their recordings. And now, the ageless Alex Waller ends the show the same way he always ends the show, when he announces that
P-Dub holded the microphone.